time to, you know, Jeff and David, the two gentlemen that are running the golf courses. You know, the product is extremely high. When you look at the caliber of courses, you know, two being in the top 25 of best municipal in the country, you know, those are, you know, very high attributes and accolades for the system. So we take that very seriously. We look at the numbers, revenue in the restaurants. They're doing an amazing job staffing and selling merchandise out of the pro shop. Certainly there's a lot of golf balls, but the rest of our merch is doing very, very well. So I think we're in a good spot regionally.
Very good. Thanks.
And Commissioner, another, I don't think you're cannibalizing. I'll use myself as an example. My wife was not a golfer before COVID 2020. She became a golfer now. She's an avid golfer. In fact, our staff have outfitted her with new clubs. She's got to have cute clothes, all that kind of stuff. We had a chance to golf with.
Contributing to the cause.
Contributing to the cause. So I think you're seeing a lot of new golfers come in to play also. I did want to point out, it's not highlighted, but when you look at net revenue, net revenue is up 12.2% year over year, $4.5 million. We often wonder about the capital. You can see it there. Construction expense on our courses and capital equipment, which is our new golf carts. So we're bringing $4.5 million in. We're putting a lot of it right back out on a cash basis. The golf operation is doing extremely well. We can go to the next slide, David. I did want to highlight two golf courses, Big Met. I was just looking at the net surplus just from operations year over year. And Big Met is the highest of all of our courses right now, 29.6% year over year. Little Met right behind it at 13.4%. All of our courses are doing well, right where we thought they would be. If you look at Mastic, it's pretty consistent. Revenues are up, but then expenses went up because we've got some additional staffing and other costs. But there's nothing in any of our individual courses that causes me any concern as your CFO as I look at everything. And then I'm really excited when I see Ironwood, which is netting out almost $500,000 in our first year. And I think that's going to do even better next year when it's our second year under our management. We can go to the next slide. Enterprise operation. This might, if you looked at your information, this might have caught your attention. I want to point that out. That's boat dock rentals. And those typically occur in late October, early November. This year, most of them came in late October. That's why there's almost nothing last year, $93,000 this year. So you can see we're running ahead. But when we do next month, you'll see a big number in November. You won't see much in October. It's just the timing of the boat rentals. But revenues are up 9.8%. And profits are up down here, the $88,300, up 34.8% in our consolidated operations for enterprise.
And we're pretty much sold out in the docks, aren't we?
I think so, yes. I don't believe there's any space.
We are, yes.
Yeah. David. Two that I did want to point out, East 55th, just having a wonderful year. In terms of net profit, it's up almost 50%. 47.9% year over year. And the restaurant is up, it's kind of a crazy percentage, but the way percentages work, it's up 216%. Went from 40,000 in net operating profits to 126,000. So East 55th Marina and the restaurant are doing extremely well. Everyone else is doing well. I always talk about Merwin's, it's our largest. It's pretty consistent with last year, just behind by about $7,000, $8,000, but it's doing well. No concerns in any of our enterprise operations. If you want to go to the next slide, David. Thank you. I did want to point out Huntington, just the impact, what our construction building, doing the playground, making the improvements down there has increased gross revenues on the top, 54.6%. So we went from $381,000 to almost $600,000. And that's because we've created a space that people want to go to. We're driving business down there and you can see what the net result is. So as we continue to improve our different parks and reservations, the hoped outcome would be just like that.
Revenue from Huntington then, what do we charge for?
It's actually the noshery.
The noshery is most of it, yeah.
The noshery.
It turns out the food service and the playground actually work out very well together. A lot of families take in time to visit and grab a hot dog or an adult beverage and then sit and watch the sunset. But the ecosystem that's been created, not only between the ice cream that's been there as a staple for quite a number of years, We've actually seen that as a huge opportunity. I would also say that under Jared's team, the staffing there was exceptional at Huntington this past summer. We had a great group of teachers that just really loved loved the opportunity to work for the Metro Parks, and it worked very well. So that's the numbers.
Yeah. And then the last slide, David. And then the one area that's down a little bit is retail, and it's down for a reason. Hinckley's closed, and Hinckley on average was about $200,000 to $300,000 a year in gross revenues. You can notice that we're not down that much, and that's primarily because e-commerce is up immensely, as well as our mobile sales. So we're starting to fill the gap with Hinckley being closed with e-commerce and with mobile sales. We believe, and I'm pretty certain that once Hinckley's back open, this number is going to start going through the roof. They're holding their own right now, and they're not even open. So when you take, I would say, 200,000, it could be 300,000 out of your revenue stream a year to be able to recover. Most of that's exceptional. So retail's doing a real good job. And that's all I had at a high level, commissioners. We're in a good spot through 10 months. Later on in the meeting, we'll be talking about next year's budget, and those conversations will be coming up next month for next year's budget.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good updates. The financial report is done. Just as a matter of course of business, we have sworn in our three new police officers. With us this morning, we have one retiring guest, Timothy Krynek, Natural Resources Area Manager. Jen?
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, everybody. It's my honor to be here with Tim today to celebrate his 30-plus years of time serving Cleveland Metro Parks and the public of Northeast Ohio. That career started in 1993 at Garfield Park Nature Center as a seasonal, and he's quickly identified for his skills and talent in engaging the public and received full-time position with North Chagrin Nature Center. Made his way over to Rocky River Nature Center and back to North Chagrin, and then finally at the Watershed Stewardship Center. And then about 10 years ago, he joined the Natural Resources Division. And what a wonderful asset to our division and the Park District, bringing that naturalist background into how to manage our natural areas. Some just real quick highlights. I really appreciate that Tim asks a scientific question, but he also pursues how to answer that, and that can be seen in our breeding bird survey work. He envisioned the study, coordinated it, helped to see it through, analyzed that data, worked with colleagues on a peer-reviewed article that will hopefully be coming out soon, but then shared it with the public as well. So all the way from beginning to end. One area that I know the public has really, really enjoyed, as well as our birds and butterflies, is at Huntington Reservation. He actively reduced some of the mowing areas, turned that into pollinator meadow, and it was just so fun for me to see, even on my personal Facebook page, the family's photographs of that area, wedding pictures, senior photos, new baby photos, and I know that Lake Erie Nature and Science Center has really been appreciative. And finally, another highlight was seeing Tim in action at our donor program talking about the world of bats and his ability to engage kids that were under 6 and adults over 60. And their wonder that they walked away with was really remarkable. So Tim takes his love for the natural world, not just professionally, but then at home, and he helps to fundraise and manage property all the way down in Ecuador, acknowledging that the birds that are visiting Northeast Ohio are making their way down south this time of year. And so he really lives and breathes this work. And it's sad to see him go, but I know we'll be in touch.
His 30-year career, the print is very small. Tim has accomplished a tremendous amount, and I was at the donor event, and it was absolutely fantastic to watch the bats and to know them. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. And one of the things that's not on the list is, you know, how he helped steer one of the properties called the Spearneck property because of the Indiana bat that was there. And land that needed to be mitigated. So he's really the original Batman, as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, the entire team, we will miss you. Congrats.
The microphone.
Speechless.
Wow, you know, you hear that and listen to that, and those 30 years went by awful fast. And I think it's very important to say that I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of wonderful people. And a lot of those things on that list were because of those wonderful people that I got to work with. And I really do appreciate my time here. And I can't sit still, so I will be continuing doing my work in just another role. So I appreciate it. One of the most rewarding parts of my job is, I remember the first day I met Brian when he walked into North Chagrin Nature Center, and over how long has it been?
14 years.
Yeah. Just to see the acreage of this park district grow has been fantastic, and to be part of that. And I encourage you all to continue doing that. I think that's one of the most valuable parts of Cleveland Metro Parks is the land that we have. So thank you.
Tim, can I ask one question?
But
with the bat situation in Northeast Ohio, obviously we've headed into the dark zone a little bit. I shouldn't say that. I guess bats like the dark zone. But how does it look now? Are things getting any better?
Bats are in trouble. Let's just say that. From white nose to migratory bats hitting wind turbines, I mean, bats are having a hard time. With that said, I have seen a rebound in Cleveland Metro Parks. Our bat population has rebounded ever slowly, but it is doing better. So that's the good news. But overall, they're in trouble.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
On the top portion of page 10, I would like the board to recognize Timothy Batman Krynick for his years of service. He did a tremendous amount of other things, but a wonderful man. Recommended action falls on page of top 10.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is 2024 budget adjustment number 11. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 10, you will see budget adjustment number 11. It's in the amount of $2,878,564. I did want to point out that two large items in the adjustment. One is $2 million. It's an increase in appropriation for capital contracts for the zoo primate forest. And we're increasing the appropriation due to $2 million in new CZS funding. And that happens throughout the year. As we do capital projects, we keep getting money to help us. And so then we have to appropriate that. We also had a $500,000 increase in capital contracts for park operations at Wood Creek Fish Passage project at the Bedford Reservation. And that's due to a new EPA grant for $450,000. And NEO RSD gave us a matching grant of $50,000. So $2.5 million are just new monies that came to us that we have to make an adjustment so that we can then do the project.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next, our request for 2025 tax advances. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 11, you'll see the request that we have to let the county know we want to take advances when they collect our property taxes. And they gave us the dates for all those settlements. They're on the top of page 11. I would just ask your approval allowing us to take those advances.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is Euclid Creek Reservation authorization to submit grant application to the Land and Water Conservation Fund and to commit our funds for the improvements at Euclid Beach. This was a project we identified a number of years ago. We did try in 2023. We were not successful. We are now going back at it again. We most recently received notification that an individual donor, again, to Wade's point, when we make budget adjustments, we have a donor that is willing to put the one-to-one match in for us. So we're requesting $500,000 from Land and Water Conservation Fund matched with a private donor funds to actually build the playground at Euclid. And so the recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 12 to enter into the agreement with the Ohio Department. So we're going to submit the grant to Ohio Department of Natural Resources.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Again, another partnership, Cleveland Metro Parks authorization to enter into a contract with Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District for grant funds and to commit matching funds. I give a lot of credit again to our development team, Dr. Kuhar, and a host of others. One of our strongest public partners has been the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District under Kyle Dreyfus-Wall's leadership. This is a project that's replacing, serving almost a 35-year piece of infrastructure. Cleveland Metro Parks is bringing $113,961. NAUR SD is bringing $455,843 for a total cost of $569,804 to work on the bypass pump needed for the project related to the zoo and zoo improvements. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 13.
Move to approve.
What is the timing on this? Is this going to happen before the work's done on the?
They're all kind of like in parallel tracks. So there's, and Sean will highlight just a little bit as we work into the contract. You know, we've taken out the one plaza already, the staging area where Wyrus was. So that's the staging area. So now we've got all the Jersey barriers and everything else. So all of these all have to work together very, very strategically.
This one just seems like sooner the better on this one, but yeah. Thank you.
Agreed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is award of RFP 6865B, Construction Manager at Risk. Cleveland Metro Parks barred permanent mooring and renovation. This is, the commissioners know, we moved very quickly to secure, purchase, and then move the barge over to Wildwood. Through its time there, we've learned a lot about the wave action. We've learned a lot about our neighbors as well, meaning when the boat was moored on the metal, it kind of goes, and they can hear it. And so we worked very hard at finding a permanent solution to basically set it down. So we have a very unique opportunity to secure it in its permanent spot. And then we'll be working forward towards our blended price and best value score as we're working through how to do this. But we're recommending Rulon Company to do the work for the construction manager at risk. That falls in the bottom portion of page 15.
Brian, then is it resting on the bottom?
Yeah, it will be. And okay. It's almost like
beached.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. If you look at about a thousand nails in a board, it's basically we're going to set it right down on top of it, so it'll be permanently moored. So it'll be it will be the best of all solutions, especially when you look at the fact that it could keep moving. Where the mouth actually comes in as the waves move, it tends to move the boat in different directions. So we found what I would call now the permanent solution. Having had it there almost a year, we've learned all of those wonderful things, and there's a tremendous amount of engagement and support from donors to be able to rehab and renovate. But this is that first next phase of how to secure it permanently. Then we can build the catwalks out to the facility and start working on the construction of actually rehabbing it.
Is this being covered by the cost or being covered by the donations that have been made, or is this an additional?
It's a part and parcel. Some of the unsexy things we normally fund as an organization. And then when we start to do the classroom and the classroom work will be additive there. But we do have some significant funds to raise yet for this. So.
Okay, thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a professional services agreement for 6874 Gorilla Primate Rainforest Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. This is a request for qualifications for professional services, Cleveland Metro Park's special testing and inspections. This is actually under Ohio revised code from the state of Ohio that we are mandated to do this. We are actually required to do this. So this is part of the big picture project. A number of firms were vetted. The one that came out on top was SME. They were valued through a host of staff members based on their qualifications. They have quite a number of field visits. They have a number of technicians, but this is an ongoing project over the next number of years. So they provided the best value to Cleveland Metro Parks for the inspection services and testing as we go along building out the rainforest. Recommended action falls in the middle portion of page 17.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is amendment number 8, guaranteed maximum price number 7, contract 1543, construction manager at risk. This is going to be, we may probably end up at 40 with this as we start back in 2020 and all the different projects. I'm going to have Sean come forward and just kind of break down where we're currently at. This is one of the more unique projects. As noted, this will be the largest capital project that Cleveland Metro Parks will do. We have guaranteed our sources and uses of funds with our partner, the Cleveland Zoological Society, the state capital budget, and a lot of private donations. But it does warrant a little bit more of a breakdown based on the full costs. Sean?
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. As you know, we have been working on this project for quite some time, actually starting back even years before a trip to Europe to go look at some of the examples of technology they've used in their zoo projects. In 2020, we brought on AM Higley & Company as a construction manager at risk so that they could help us through the process of developing plans, developing pricing, and they have done just that. So we've set up this sequential process. So today we're in front of you for GMP7. Looking back in the past, we actually started with some of our first guaranteed maximum prices. So number one, two, and then part of three was for the demolition of the Wyrus property. So last year we took down the Wyrus property. When the opportunity came about for that property to be purchased in partnership with the Zoological Society, we jumped on it because not only does it help us stage for the primate forest project, but then we can incorporate Wyrus into the larger master planning for the zoo when we rethink about the front entrance and think about how to reconfigure parking. Primate forest specifically, we are now under construction. We've got construction fence up. We have work going on in the rainforest. We have the work along the creek going on that you approved as part of GMP 5 and 6. So what's before you today is that next step. So GMP 7, what it does is it brings all the components of the first sequence of work with the exception of the renovation of the interior of the rainforest. So we will come back to you with that in January and likely February. And that time we'll also bring back some images and kind of show you some updates in construction. We can show you inside what the rainforest is looking like. We'll give you an update on the creek work. But we're really happy where we are in terms of budget. We're basically on budget, working with Wade, working with CZS, knowing that we're kind of marching towards that $60 million number once we come back to you in the January and February timeframe. But Higley has been very good and helpful to us to understand what the headwinds are looking like in the market in terms of the subcontractors. We've worked really hard to work on our steel numbers, our electrical numbers, our plumbing numbers, our masonry numbers, and that is reflected in this, both the GMC, the GMP 7, and then the other GMP that we'll bring forward for the rainforest. So happy to answer any questions that you have in the progression of where we are today and what we're looking for in the next few months.
That's thorough.
Thank you.
Questions? Excellent job again, Dr. Kuhar, the Zoo Society, Sean's entire team, all the zoo team that are going to have to stage this. And we do have our one dedicated staff member every day who lives and breathes the Rainforest Project as our owner's rep on our side. So we're constantly monitoring cost, process, project, and execution. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 19.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is authorization to enter into a contract with Ohio Department of Natural Resources into a lease and management agreement with Bedrock. This is kind of a unique one. This is part of House Bill 2, General Assembly. They awarded capital funds to the project titled Cleveland Tower City and Bedrock Development. If we pull the map up there, thank you, David. This is really part of the Cuyahoga River Master Plan. Cleveland Metro Parks was part of the vision for the Valley and a host of others. We were identified as the takeout partner as part of the big picture of an agency that's doing the work relative to all of the connection and connection points. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Cleveland Clinic just announced a massive project that includes the training center right on the shore of the Cuyahoga River. This is part and parcel where the old Eagle Avenue Bridge is. There'll be a facility that will be of public use. And so we are the agency that will basically attest to the work that is being done and making sure that the public access to the land and amenities funded through the state capital for at least the next 15 years.
So pedestrian access is what, the old Eagle?
So the Eagle, the Eagle is going to be taken out. Yeah. At some point in time, I think the goal is that the company will undo, drop, turn on a barge and take out. They'll take the towers down from what I understand. And then, so the project area is defined. You can see the Eagle Avenue Bridge and its yeah. placement. And this is part and parcel to where that will be. There'll be a redesign of the road coming in. The road actually goes through the building where the Cavs training facility will be, and then the Cleveland Clinics facility will be for the rehabilitation. So this is really helping ensure public access. If you look at where it says project area on the opposite side, the green, that was the original, one of the original projects of the towpath and towpath completion. So it's basically equating onto both sides. At some point in time in the future, we may look at an adaptive reuse where the Eagle Avenue Bridge came down to make a cross connection back and forth. Again, that is more futuristic. That is not planned in this current status. But if you look at the Cuyahoga Riverfront Master Plan boundary, kind of the dotted line, it's kind of looking at how do we make all of these unique connections. This is part of Mayor Bibb's core to shore to core process as well, where Bedrock is putting in a tremendous amount of assets to redefine this particular area.
Wow.
Will we be contracting for the work that's associated with this grant, or will we be doing it in-house?
My guess is contracting. Our teams are very, their schedule is very busy right now.
Brian, is it true that the announcement of this project is why the Cavaliers are doing so well?
I actually think it is. Yes, other than the night in Boston where they again, I give you know, the Bedrock group a tremendous amount of credit to invest in our city's core. This training facility, bringing it in, will be a world-class facility partnered with, you know, certainly the Cleveland Clinic, the Cavaliers brand, Bedrock, Dan Gilbert. This is just our part as a public agency to help along to move the money through from the state into this for at least the 15 years to assure public access. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 20.
Move to approve.
So,
on favor.
Aye.
The next is just an amendment to a management services agreement. Cleveland Metro Park started back in 2013, which is hard to believe. The adventure rope course down at Go Ape and Millstream Run Reservation. The team has negotiated out the next opportunity for them to continue their operations. Most of the math sits on the bottom portion of page 21. Total compensation for usage and fees over the 5 years, over $100,000. We have been very blessed. It's actually been very complimentary to the, it's called the chalet, you know, the toboggan and recreation facility. We've been very blessed with that activity all summer long to keep the programmatic elements going. We also do now have, for the first time, a liquor license there as well. Future plans would include for us, hopefully in this current levy cycle, to rebuild the chalet and potentially a sheet of ice, an outdoor sheet of ice. We bought the chillers with the intent that we could potentially do that. So there'll be additional things coming forward that will be complementary not only to the summer activities that Go Ape provides, but then the winter activities as well. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 22 to continue on through the amendment at the current management services agreement.
Move to approve.
Second.
On favor.
Aye.
The next part, the most fun part of the agenda, the adoption of revised code, Cleveland Metro Parks. Rose.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, this is the annual update to our regulations. And yes, it is the most exciting part of the agenda. So you'll see the summary of changes on page 69 of the agenda. Those are reflections to incorporate changes that have happened in the Ohio revised code to make sure there are no conflicts with our more local regulations. And then in addition, we have a number of changes that we're proposing. This project is, as always, a collaboration between the law department, our police department, and our prosecutor, Marisa Marinella. And we've done a really nice job. The police officers, several of them, have studied the regulations and came forward with additional recommendations in this turn of changes, starting with trying to improve our efforts to remove those cars that are left. And our hands were tied in moving them for 48 hours. But with these edits to the impounding of vehicles and redemption section, we're able to address those vehicles that not only are obstructing a roadway, but also are on any part of our land that are posing a hazard or potential destruction to our natural resources. So you'll see those two changes in also carry over into the 351.03. And then next, we have the in Part 5 General Offenses Code. As we are all aware, there was a state initiative statute change which allowed the use of recreational marijuana in the state of Ohio. The specific provision in the Ohio Revised Code does prohibit the use, cultivation and dispensing or processing of adult use cannabis on governmental property. And so where you see the adoption of this regulation a little differently within municipalities, because municipalities include private land as well as public land. For us, all of our land is publicly owned. So there is no recreational marijuana use, cultivation or dispensing or processing on our land at all. And so this regulation incorporates the Ohio Revised Code, which covers that prohibition and makes it clear so our police officers can cite to this section when we are enforcing that status. Next, we have clarified just one change from ranger to police in section 525.10. That was a leftover edit when we changed our nomenclature from ranger to police. And then in 533.13, we have incorporated a specific provision. We were using a more generic provision to prevent the public urination defecation. After looking at this and studying it, we just said, let's include an explicit provision here that our police officers can use and not have any technical issues by using a different section of the regulations, which wasn't as clearly enunciated with that prohibition. And then we have incorporated in large part the in 541.05, the criminal damaging and endangering. We just incorporated that provision to eliminate the restriction to park district property. So any criminal damaging or endangering that is occurring within our park district can now more clearly be cited under that code. Our police officers also did some research with respect to the air guns and ammunition and looked at other municipalities. And so we incorporated a number of sections here from 549.05 through point 08, it looks like. So incorporating these provisions with respect to the air guns, just because we're seeing the frequency of the guns and we don't want any limitations, and so that it is clear that these sorts of arms also would not be permitted within the park district. And then finally, 743.08, the just more clarification regarding any of those inland lakes or places where we would not want fishing to happen, by designating that the signage to occur and making it clear where the fishing cannot happen, more clearly sets us up for success with that enforcement. And I, any chief, captain, you good? Okay. I covered that sufficiently in their eyes. Any questions from the commissioners? All right.
Recommended action falls in the bottom, or I'm sorry, top portion of page 31 to adopt the Cleveland Metro Parks rules and regulations in their entirety.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next, we have the recommended action of award bids, RFPs, co-ops. There are a couple on here just to highlight Watershed Stewardship Center exhibit refresh. It's hard to believe that facility's well over a decade old at this point in time. Our partners, again, with the sewer district helped build the facility. We will be using some funds relative to contributions from the sewer district to refresh parts of the exhibits. Bid number 6868, Cuyahoga Hawthorne Bridge Parkway rehabilitation. Again, the Municipal Bridge Program is bringing funds to help with that. So again, I applaud our staff for things that we would ordinarily be doing. There are partnerships. We were able to get that one on bid now, finally, with Great Lakes, to try to coordinate track time, utility, and a number of other things. There were a lot of variables, so we're happy to bring that back forward. Most of the rest are setting up for the 2025-2026 season as we work forward. The recommended action for the award of bids is on page 32.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We have approval of vouchers and payroll, two of them, Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 59, you'll see resolution 24-11-146 in the amount of $14,885,884.69. All of these vouchers have been reviewed as to their legality, and they conform with the Ohio Revised Code. I would ask your approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
I have to abstain.
Not this one.
Okay.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then commissioners, on the top of page, or on page 60, you'll see resolution 24-11-147 in the amount of $81.50. That expenditure has been reviewed to its legality, and it conforms with the Ohio Revised Code. I would ask for your approval of that payment to Arborware.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Commissioner Dan Moore did abstain. We'll move into public comments.
Marty, yes.
Good morning. Good to see that Metro Parks is involved with food composting. Definitely something worth doing and promoting. There used to be discussions here on how to safely compost carnivore manure, also needed. Create productive soil rather than adding to landfills. That is active conservation. Back in 2017, I praised some newly improved detail in financials. Sadly, that's no longer true. Multiple examples today. A one-year outside tech renewal gets a two-thirds increase with other possible hires involved. Pretty vague. The refreshed West Creek topo map alone runs $500,000, no staff estimate given, with a sewer tunnel not even included. Outside IT staff support with individual recipients to be determined later. Also new this month, 2024's payouts for a bid are given only for a partial year, but then a substantial new contract is awarded for 3 years. Office supplies will triple the prior amount per month. Same approach for golf merchandise. Makes it hard to compare while major future increases would be easy to miss or dismiss. Given the sizable levy, and again considering conservation as a core principle, stop pushing and celebrating merch sales. Come out and pay. Supporting African animal programs is great, but the continent does not need any more old t-shirts. Not to mention the resources needed to manufacture, decorate, and distribute them. Merch bid is another two-thirds increase. The new park user survey will likely lead to a new catchphrase to be printed on new plastic banners everywhere. You're proud to be a commercial success and compete with private industry. Perhaps driving sales of stuff is not how a park district should be measuring its progress these days. Instead, acknowledge the ever-increasing threats of climate change. Show the wisdom to step back and evaluate your priorities. Redirect your efforts to help visitors appreciate what you offer that doesn't require depleting natural resources. Finding pleasure in being, not buying. Secure a future for all of us. Tim Krynak was deservedly lauded today for a long commitment to natural resources, here and everywhere. Use your power to carry that forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you so much. We will move into the information briefing items and policy. Wade will highlight now the 2025 budget preview. Wade?
Thank you, Brian. They're getting the PowerPoint up. Let's see how good it advances now. Thank you, Anthony.
Technology as it works, Wade.
Wow. That IT guy is pretty good, isn't he?
He's a joy.
Okay.
Oh, that was funny.
Okay. Commissioners, what I'm here to discuss today is just a preview of what we're going to be going through in December. And one of the things I did want to highlight with the budget, capital project rollovers from 24 to 25 will be finalized before the December meeting. So you'll know all those. You'll know what projects have not been completed but were budgeted and are carried over. Restricted funds are only budgeted if amounts are known. Otherwise, they'll be appropriated in 2025. I think often people wonder, why do we have budget adjustments? We can't budget for something we're not certain we're going to get, whether it be a grant, whether it be a donation. Once that is known, then we go ahead and budget for that. Our budget book is due to the GFY within 90 days of formal approval. Our formal approval hopefully will be at your board meeting on December 19, 2024. Target date, though, to have the book completed would be February 28, 2025. A couple of the highlights now. Right now, and I should have started with this, and I apologize. I did have a comment I wanted to offer. In terms of the budget, I view this as one of the most important tasks that U.S. commissioners or a board undertakes, and that's establishing the spending authority for the organization. Consequently, for finance, it's one of the most important things we do is help compile that budget for you to consider, the spending authority, as well as update the 10-year forecast. And so I would be remiss if I didn't recognize Brian and all the other chiefs who have been extremely helpful. The budget process is never easy. There's give and take, and not everybody gets everything they want. But all of the chiefs have been outstanding in their staff and putting together what I would call a very good spending plan. You know, this time of the year, people talk about it being the most wonderful time of the year because it's the holidays in finance. It's the most wonderful time of the year because we're doing the preview. And now for the next month, we get to finalize this budget. And maybe we're nerds, but we love that. And this is really what we live to do is get together a good plan for you to consider and to guide us into the next year. Next year's operating budget is $147.2 million as we stand here today. By frame of reference, last year in 24, that was $140.1 million. Operating expenditures 10 years ago were 79.2. So that's a $68 million increase in 10 years. Capital projects next year are budgeted $25 million. Capital projects 10 years ago were $21.7 million.
2015 was a unique year too, because that was the lakefront transfer where we brought $14 million from the state over as well. So what we were budgeting was actually a little bit less than that. So
thank you, Brian. Yes. And I was going to, and that kind of comes up, we're budgeting capital allocations at $4.5 million. You can see that's a sizable increase from 2015, which was 2.8. Land acquisitions are budgeted at 2.5 million. And this references what Brian was just mentioning, 2.7 million was what we spent in land acquisitions 10 years ago. And I'm sure you're well aware that we've spent more than $2.5 million the last couple of years in land acquisitions. But in terms of the 10-year forecast, at some point we won't spend that much. When opportunities present themselves to buy land, we do. But if we don't have good land acquisitions, the 2.5 million that's budgeted will just roll forward.
Wade, what was that this year?
Land purchases thus far, I think, are at about $6 or $7 million. It's in the October report.
Considerably higher.
Considerably higher. But if you think about it, we bought the golf course
last year. Yeah. I think, Commissioner, this year our total land acquisitions are going to be much lower unless we're able to clear a number of things with our partners, either at the City of Cleveland, West Creek Conservancy, and others. So right now it looks like it'll be under 100 acres. But each one of these properties isn't necessarily all the same. You look at a $3 million for 155 acre golf course, or if you look at Marlin Investments and the Cereal Foods, each one of them has kind of their unique strategy that's with them. So, you know, as when you came on board, well over a decade ago, the elasticity of the 10 years, we have to work within the framework. So there are going to be pushes and pulls where we let it out a little bit, then we have to kind of pull back. So this year could be a year that we're under 100 acres of actual conservation. The next year could be teed up in a very different way.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, if you think about it, our largest revenue source, our levies, about 60% of our revenue. I don't know many businesses that could exist with almost no increase in their largest revenue source for 10 years, which is what we have to do every levy cycle in the forecast. So some comparisons of what we're budgeting for next year compared to the current year. Baseline operating budget, again, is $147.2 million. Last year, the original budget was $140.1. But you can see it's been revised through adjustments on the operating side of 149.6. The original operating budget, which including the capital projects, capital equipment, and land acquisitions for 24 was 178. So clearly the difference between 140 and 178. Current year spend year to date is $109 million on operating. So that's right in line with where we thought we would be on that revised operating budget. We'll actually come in below the operating budget. I did want to touch on revenues a little bit. $168 million is what we're budgeting for revenues last year. And I'll just jump down. Year to date, this year, we're at almost 167. Year to date, last year, we're at 168. The question might be, well, why are we only budgeting 168? We can't budget for things we're not certain we're going to get. If we get a grant or something again, we will budget for that. These are actual numbers which have been increased for new revenues that have come in. In 2025, there's going to be a modest increase in charges for services. You approved those at the last meeting, our various charges for services, grants and donations, and property tax I mentioned at the 1%.
I would also add there too, interestingly enough, with the rainforest not being online for this next period of construction. Also, Hinkley Lake has, you know, been repositioned with the renovation and dredge. So there are things that kind of push and pull over time. Wallace Lake will then come on board. Seneca's nine holes, we close that down. So each year there are different uniquenesses that actually happen to the budget from a revenue standpoint.
And as we go forward, salaries and wages, next year by budget are going to make up $72.7 million or 49.4% of the baseline operating budget. That's meaningless unless you can compare it in this year's budget. That was 51%. So it's a little lower percentage. Employee fringes next year budget at 25.2, 17.1. Last year that was 16%. So employee fringes have gone up. Part of it's health insurance, which you heard from Matt Haas talk about the increased cost of health insurance. And health benefits, $11.9 million. Next year, 8% of our baseline operating budget. This year, it's 7%. So you can see these two items have gone up. They work in sync. That's part of that, which then means salaries and wages are a lower percentage. If you've got 100%, if one goes up, one will go down. But all in all, our wages and salaries are right in line with where we think they should be, which is about 50% of our operating budget. And Brian mentioned this, I did want to highlight with the zoo, they've got revenues budgeted at $16.4 million. It's an increase of 3.1% over this year, but they're going to be dramatically impacted by the rainforest being closed. So the fact that we can still budget a modest increase is good. Expenditures right now are budgeted at $28.6 million, which is an increase of 5.9%. With inflation and salaries and additional staffing, that's right in line with where we should be. And so we're happy with that. This right now is being impacted by the rainforest. I've got that note down here. So to budget for a modest increase, even with the closure of the rainforest, I compliment the zoo. They've got a plan to get there, and we're just hopeful that the visitors come, the weather cooperates, and we meet those targets. And then lastly, we'll do some golf highlights. Golf right now is budgeted for revenue at $13.55 million, operating expenditures at $11.77 million. So that's a net $1.78 million profit. You just saw we were at about $4.5 million. We took over Ironwood in 2023, so 2024 was our first year. We think we can get a higher percentage increase in play there, being our second year. But for all of the other courses, we have to be careful. At some point, it's going to be weather or some other reason that we can't. I mean, they keep setting records, they being the golf team. At some point, that's going to level off, or we're going to just get a bad year weather-wise, and it's going to go down. So the golf team, I will compliment them, have been very conservative in their estimate on what they think revenue will be. My hope is that it'll be higher than that, but we're very comfortable that they'll hit that number. They'll hold expenses, so they'll come up at about $1.8 million net profit. If they hit their budget, but we're thinking it's going to be better than that. Greens fees and other related revenues at various courses are budgeted for modest increases, and those were again approved by all of you at the last meeting. Those were the highlights I had. We'll be having the chance to talk with all of you over the next month, Brian and I, in great detail about the budget that we'll be bringing forward. And again, it's an important document. It's what's going to control our spending next year. And then looking at the 10-year plan as we modify that going forward, our 10-year forecast, it's going to be what controls us going forward. One thing we did not touch on today, but we'll be touching on, is the huge project going on down at the zoo. It's going to be $40 to $60 million in spend next year in terms of the rainforest. And so we have most of that money already in hand, but we've just not budgeted all of it because we're budgeting it as pieces come out. But we have some of that money in hand. The rest of it is in the process of being collected by the Zoological Society or in tax revenues that are going to be coming in future years. And so that'll be a part of our discussion next month also.
I think this is a terrific overview of particularly the major segments. I think one thing missing, though, is trails. And trails, remember, is the number one thing that people want out of the Metro Park. It's a thing that comes up first on surveys. Now, maybe it's changed in the last year or so, but that's the way it's always been. And I think we ought to have a comparison of trail expenditures, new and maintenance. I mean, obviously, as we built a lot of trails and it requires a lot of maintenance, but I think we should track that as something that our constituency values, seems to value more than anything else.
Well said.
Commissioner, I'll pull that together for you.
Wade, thank you. I'd like to thank all of the chiefs and all of the staff. It's an entire process from the ground up. And again, it's working through a 10-year framework. So there's going to be pushes and pulls. The next information briefing item we have is emerging technologies, satellites, and LoRaWAN. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners.
Morning.
So today I'm going to be talking to you all about some exciting technological advances that we've been exploring in the ITS department and how some of this technology can come into play for natural resources. So the first project I'm going to be talking to you all about is LoRaWAN, which has a wonderfully catchy name, but essentially it just stands for Long Range Wide Area Network. So I'm not going to go too deep into how this technology works, but essentially it allows for really energy efficient data transmission. So sensors are able to send information wirelessly over very long distances. Some of the advantages of this are low cost for the sensors, very long battery life. And as you can see in this image, this is how LoRaWAN compares to some other wireless communication that we're all familiar with. So one of the advantages is that you don't need a SIM card or a data logger like some other cellular sensors. And the only limitation is that this technology does have a low bandwidth, so you're not able to transmit photos or videos, but for other types of data collection, there's a lot of advantages. So over the last year, some of the different applications that we've been exploring with this technology are environmental monitoring with in-situ sensors. So essentially this just means a sensor that is remaining in the place that it's collecting data. So if you think of like a weather station or a probe that's being submerged into a body of water, as opposed to taking a sample back to a lab to analyze. And Jen is going to be talking more about some of the natural resources implications of this, but one benefit of this is that you're able to get a fully comprehensive picture of that site. So you're getting 24/7 data collection that's just being wirelessly transmitted to your device. Another application that we've been exploring is utility sensors. So this is a really popular application of this technology. Anything that you think of in like a smart home is really applicable with LoRaWAN. So water leak detection, energy monitoring and consumption meters, things like that. And then we've also been exploring applications for this technology in trail monitoring. So there are infrared LoRaWAN sensors that are able to count in both directions the number of times a person walks by. So when I spoke to you all a few months ago about this technology, we've been exploring some different applications for trail counting with this technology. So the gateways are a really important piece of this technology. This map just shows all of the gateways that we currently have here at the Metro Parks. And as you can see, these gateways can have a very wide range. And the gateways are really essential for data transmission for these sensors. So anywhere that there's a gateway within range, it can support hundreds of sensors transmitting their data to your device. And as you can see in the upper right corner, the three blue triangles represent gateways that are from the Cleveland Water Alliance. So that's an organization that has really been pioneering work in this field. And we've been working with them a lot and learned a lot from them about this technology. And one important takeaway from gateways is you can deploy them on a private or a public model. And so we have decided to deploy ours on a public model. So that means other organizations are able to benefit from this infrastructure. So if there's another organization that has sensors deployed within range of our gateway, they're able to utilize that signal. So another emerging technology that we've been exploring in IT is the use of satellites. We've been working with natural resources and GIS to explore some different satellite imagery and remote sensing applications. And ultimately, we've landed on a contract with Planet Labs, which has a constellation of satellites called SkySat. These were launched in 2016. And basically, with this contract, we're able to task these satellites for imagery. So their satellites are circling the globe every single day taking imagery. And we're able to delineate areas of interest and request that they take imagery within a certain time frame, and then they deliver that imagery to us. So this is useful for a lot of different reasons. Looking at the same area at different frequencies allows you to look at change detection, land management, and monitor capital projects. And so this image here just shows in blue the area that we delineated from North Chagrin down to Bedford Reservation, and then that image is the satellite capture that was taken.
How often does that, is that an overflight every day or?
Yeah, so this constellation of satellites, I have an animation that shows their orbit, but they're circling the globe every single day. So when it comes to tasking, you can in theory take an image every single day. That's really expensive. So typically, when you're looking at like such a large area like our reservations, it would be a little bit more reasonable to look at like every month or so to be able to capture imagery. But yeah, there are organizations that do take daily imagery tasking from satellites. It's just, it's very expensive.
But who's using Planet Labs? Is the government using it?
There's a lot of different organizations. Definitely, this is used in a lot of land conservation agencies. So other government organizations, Department of Defense, but essentially anyone can task these satellites. It's very expensive, but as long as you have a contract with them, you can request an area of capture and they will take that image for you.
Now, are these SpaceX satellites that are
yeah, Elon.
That they're contracting with that Planet Labs is contracting with?
So they actually have their own constellation of satellites that they launched into orbit. So they're not contracting these satellites from anyone. They have their own constellation that they created called SkySat. And so other organizations are able to task imagery from their satellites.
Interesting.
And I just want to highlight that this is just one of many tools in the land conservation toolbox. So this is an image that was created by Tom Kraft and GIS to showcase some of the different sources of aerial imagery that the Cleveland Metro Parks uses. And as you can see on the left, drone imagery really is unmatched in its resolution. You can see, you know, the clarity and the fine detail. Satellites really come into play in situations where drones aren't as feasible. So for example, if the weather conditions don't permit, in certain areas where there could be flight regulations over the airspace. So for example, Burke Lakefront Airport, we have some areas of interest near there, and there can be some limitations with drone flight. And then satellites are also helpful when you're looking at a really wide swath of land to capture. So, you know, a drone isn't as feasible when you're looking at an entire reservation, multiple reservations, or even capturing the entire park system in one go. And then this, if this animation will play, let's see, would you mind, Dave? So this is an animation that shows the orbit of these satellites that we are able to task for imagery. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, they're, you know, flying above us every day and we're able to go in and task imagery. And one thing to note with this animation, one of the sort of limitations of satellites is that, as you can see, they're flying above the cloud cover. So with satellite imagery, there can be clouds covering the images. So the way that this tasking contract addresses that and sort of solves that problem is when you request a task, there's a 2-week window that they're capturing that image in. So you could, for example, go in and say, I want an image captured on this day. But if on that day there's cloud cover in the area, you don't want an image that's like 80% just white clouds. So the captures are taken within a 2-week window and they're delivering you the best possible image within that 2-week window. So if you place a task and there's no cloud cover the next day, you could get that image as soon as the next day. It's basically just to ensure that you're getting the clearest possible image. And then one other thing to note with this is Anthony Joy, our CIO, who has been, you know, exploring all these different tech applications, is actually going to be talking about this technology at the Smart Cities Conference in Texas next month. So just wanted to highlight that to show how, you know, we're talking with other organizations about this and participating in some knowledge sharing. And with that being said, I'm going to hand it off to Jen, our Director of Natural Resources, to talk about some of the natural resource applications of this technology.
Thank you.
Thanks, Renee. And thanks to IT for working with us on this. It's really exciting to see how we're always looking for new solutions. So just a couple quick examples. This is a stormwater retrofit project at the chalet where there was some interesting water dynamics, and we wanted to understand more about that. So it seemed like a good test case for these new sensors and the gateway. And no, that's okay. So you can see a picture of the array on the right-hand side with those sensors, and these are just some examples of the data that we can pick up. And Renee spoke about the continuity, so it's not just one point in time, but it's continuous data. So here we are looking at air temperature and relative humidity. On these dashboards, we see soil pH and soil moisture. We can also get those specific measures on the right-hand side. And the thing I'd really like to highlight is Renee's excellent competence at not just helping us deploy these sensors, but developing these dashboards so that we can visualize and see what's going on. So right next to the chalet, we have the East Branch Rocky River, and we thought perhaps when the river is up, that groundwater is influencing the function of these bioretention cells at the chalet. So we also installed this water level sensor on the East Branch. And this is a really good test because USGS gauges cost tens of thousands of dollars to install, and then upwards of $16,000+ a year to maintain. So we are really, and so then you think about how distributed of a resource you can have if you're managing multiple sites. So we're really excited about this. And also Renee's ability to bring in precipitation data from external sources like the National Weather Service. So it's really putting it all in one place. Here we'll move over to Garfield Park. And this is similar to the East Branch Rocky River example, where we are on Wolf Creek looking at the water levels. And that's really important to us as we now have the renewed pond. And understanding the maintenance of it, understanding when Wolf Creek overtops into the pond. So if we can understand that elevation, then we can set up alerts to our park manager, Grant Hodge, to say, hey, maybe it's overtopped. Maybe we need to check for trash in the pond. It could impact programming with Outdoor Rec and Youth Outdoors. So it's just helping us further understand how the water is interacting on that site. And then to go to the satellite imagery, I was aware that IT was looking into satellites, and I was going through that thought process. You know, we have drones, we have an excellent GIS team, why do we need this additional imagery? And this summer really highlighted that need, namely what you're looking at here, an image after the tornadoes in early August. And my team was like, well, we need a good glimpse across the parked district of where that damage is so that we can understand the management going forward and special areas that we need to keep an eye on. Other uses, in this case, this is an image from July. And if you'll notice this discolored tree, it's an oak tree that has succumbed to oak wilt. Yes, I'm on the parkway taking this picture. It's convenient that the tree is next to the parkway, but what if that tree is in the middle of the forest? It could likely go undetected. And oak wilt is something that doesn't take time to show. It's very immediate, and it's a predictable time of year. So Renee spoke about when to task these satellites. We would know to task them in the height of summer, in that July timeframe, early August, to understand if we're having oak wilt in the middle of our forest. And then lastly, thinking about this time of year, it's a really good time to detect invasive plants like this Norway maple that you see, because that is one of the advantages of these non-native plants is that they green up early in the spring and they hold on to that later into the year. So again, that's a predictable time of year. We could task the satellite this time of year and look for the green plants and know with high likelihood that it is invasive. So with that, I'll hand it over to Renee to finish us up.
And then I just wanted to close by talking about some other future applications that we can explore with this technology. So now that we're building this infrastructure of LoRaWAN gateways, we can look to other forms of environmental sensing. So one example that Jen brought up is a collaboration with the city of Cleveland to deploy air quality sensors. So we would be able to use this network to basically create a sensor network of air quality sensors. And then, as I said, there's a lot of utility sensing applications that can be helpful for park operations and zoo facilities. We've also been exploring this technology at the zoo. So working to collect data on a mini forest that was planted at the zoo to get some different environmental data on air temperature, humidity, soil moisture, things like that. And then with our satellite technology, like Jen said, looking into invasive vegetation monitoring and forest health applications. There are a lot of really cool remote sensing tools that are available with these satellite providers. And also looking to expand this water level sensor network, because like Jen said, it's very low cost. So once, you know, it's very highly scalable once you have the gateway infrastructure in place. And that is all I got.
Can I ask one question? What about collecting data just with a cell phone, with that sort of connection? How expensive is that? So if you wanted to have the ability to get a piece of data every day or maybe twice a day, is that an expensive installation? And is it they must have little simple systems to do that.
Yeah, cellular sensors are still a really, like I said, with like having multiple tools in the toolbox, that's still a really important data collection tool. Depending on like the research grade of the equipment, those can definitely be more expensive. But one thing to note with cellular devices is that you do need a SIM card or some sort of subscription service so that you can be transmitting that data.
Yeah.
So that sort of adds to the costs over time because you're paying for that subscription, or you need something like a data logger to collect that data. So it's still definitely useful, and there's a lot of different applications where LoRaWAN is still expanding. So cellular sensors are, you know, still very necessary, but.
Very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. The last info item we have is the 2024 reservation plan updates. Bedford, Brecksville, Hinckley, South Chagrin, as part of our CAPRA accreditation standards, we need to make sure that the commissioners and that we're reviewing these. Kelly?
Yeah, that's great. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Brian. Excited to be wrapping up this year's plan updates today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a reminder that these reservation plans really roll up into that umbrella of our overall mission and our goals that really move that mission to action. As Brian mentioned, they're crucial for us maintaining our accreditation, but they're also really a good kind of document that we can reference over and over as we apply for grants, as we look to the budget process. So they're really meant to be a resource for our staff. We covered about 12,000 acres of the park district this year, so it was a pretty intense process. And I always want to recognize, you know, so many people in this room, so many people throughout our staff participate in these plans, and I think that's why they can be so robust and really, you know, give us a good tool to use. So we are here, you know, really wrapping up the process today. Gave you some action shots of how we work on the plans. And we recently completed the engagement and met with you all in September. And since between now and then, we had 4 open houses, you know, 1 at each of the parks. We also had an online version that seems to be convenient for folks. Had great attendance at those. Also sent letters, reached out to each of the 20 communities surrounding these parks. They helped us promote the open houses. A few communities had some questions, and we had follow-up meetings with them, and documented about 100 comments related to the parks. So, you know, it's always fun to go out in the community, and typically we're met by people who know the parks really well, who love to use the parks, and are really helpful with giving, you know, feedback on some, in some areas it's very specific, and some it's just kind of general. So, you know, looking at parking congestion or how we can, you know, kind of help direct people to additional attractions throughout the park district, so everybody's not going to the same waterfall all the time. Looking at maybe having programs in areas that aren't typically open to the public. That was a comment we heard in Bedford. I think people do realize that we put a lot of effort into maintaining and stewarding both our natural resources and the park infrastructure. There's a little concern, you know, to make sure that if we add new attractions that we're not bringing congestion to a specific point. You know, so that's, it's always good to kind of hear those outside thoughts. We had great representation from equestrian users at each of the meetings, and some ideas for some more detailed ways that would make the parks maybe a little more accessible to folks. So, you know, again, kind of taking these ideas under advisement. And wanted to mention too that folks from the Buckeye Trail, since it does run through these four reservations, they were really appreciative of all the work our park staff puts forward to maintaining the Buckeye Trail. So just in general, at Hinckley, there were some questions and concerns from some of the neighbors about, we just have kind of a general land protection dash along the East Branch Rocky River. And we were able to really clarify that, you know, our goal is to work with willing sellers. That's what we've demonstrated over the past few years. People were excited to see the progress on the dam and ready to start using the spillway again as soon as they can. The recent acquisition of the Duncan property is great, with the, you know, ability to add that loop trail, completing the loop trail around the lake. And then people are fans of the current boathouse, but there is also some excitement about the idea that we propose about a potential new structure that could have multiple uses. And then just some kind of more management suggestions about trailer parking. So at Brecksville, Josiah and I went out to the Fall Fest, which was a great experience, seeing the people that even came out on a rainy day to attend that event. But a lot of enthusiasm for how Brecksville can really connect, you know, a lot of different resources. And specifically, people mentioned hotel guests and the Valor Acres development, that that can be their gateway to both Brecksville and the National Park. Appreciation for the ability to use Brecksville Stables. Folks are always asking about other ways to use it, so that's good to hear, and we'll kind of consider that. And then upgrades at Stirwoods and Meadows would be really welcome. And then again, the trail improvements along Chippewa Creek. So Commissioner Moore, as you mentioned, trails are always top of mind for folks, and I think they're pretty pleased with a lot of the work that's taken place. So Bedford, again, excitement about a new trail connector, the Sagamore connector. We actually have a field visit this afternoon to go out and walk that route. And that's, you know, underway, that partnership. Access to areas north of Button Road, east of Dunham. That's what we mentioned as far as maybe that's a program use, that we can have hikes go there occasionally. Astorhurst, starting to look at better connections there. Community partners. The meeting at Bedford, Mayor Cochi and some of his staff came out, and Mayor Blackwell from Maple Heights was there. So just, you know, our community partners are really excited about the work as well. Then South Chagrin, again, a lot of support for new trails, a lot of excitement about the pending Esther and Nathan Rzepka Park improvements. Some of the I don't know, I almost want to say edits, but some of the minor kind of changes at the polo field to expand access, to expand views to the river, while maintaining that use by equestrians. I just had some discussion about that. And again, more trail projects with Solon to Chagrin, and then the proposed all-purpose trail connection from miles north to the polo field. and the pending improvements at Arbor. So that's really kind of a glimpse at what we heard and what we talked about, the final plans. I just provided a paper copy because they can be hard to print. They'll be posted online within the next few days. And then next year, we're excited to kind of focus on the kind of the core parks in Cuyahoga County. So looking at Brookside, Garfield, Ohio and Erie Canal, Washington, and West Creek. So that's all I had today.
Were there any comments about the reusing the polo field for equestrian use, or was that pretty much finished?
I think there were no comments about kind of the large programs that used to take place, like the Hunter Jumper. They were more related to an annual campout that they have that we're still able to accommodate. And I think our folks with the Ohio Horsemen's Council saw that we're taking care to maintain that trailer parking and that major access point. And, you know, just being mindful of one conversation was things that pop up like cross-country team practice when they're mm-hmm. going with their horses. So some of those are more kind of management interventions, or even I think our park manager has reached out to a specific cross-country coach. So maintaining that communication, but overall our equestrian users seem pretty happy.
Good, thank you.
Very good update. Okay,
thank you.
Just to, you know, reiterate thanking the staff, a lot of time, a lot of evening events. Also thanking all of the community that came out to support the public meetings to really provide input. It continues to guide and shape the next century of stewardship. So I very much appreciate that. That was the last information briefing and policy. We have no old business. Our next regularly scheduled meeting, the last meeting of the year, is Thursday, December 19th, 2024. And we do have an executive session. Rose?
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of acquisition or purchase of real property?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Roll call.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Yvette Itu?
Yes.
Bruce Rinker?
Yes. We're back.
Closing to adjourn?
New adjourn. Move to approve.
Second.
Sorry.
This meeting?
Yes.
Oh, I screwed it up.
You know, I.